If you want, either way. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Jaya Giridhara Dhari, Jaya Giridhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Banachari, Tira Banachari, Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunjabi Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya, Naram Chaiva Narottamam, Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam, Tato Jaya Mudirayat, Nashta prayashu abhadreshu. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati uttama shloke. Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Irregular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotional service unto the Supreme Person, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the Bhagavatam today. I request the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas, as well as all the Vaishnavas, that I can say something helpful today. We are in Canto 1, Chapter 12. Verse 18, the title of the chapter is Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Shri Rajavacha Apyesha Vamsham Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanaha Anuvartitas Vidyashasa Saduvadena Satamaha. Shri Rajavacha Apyesha Vamshyan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanaha Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satamaha. Apyesha Vamshan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanah Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satamah Apyesha Vamshan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanah Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satamah Apyesha Vamshan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanah Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satama Shri Raja Vacha Apyesha Vamshan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanah Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satama Shri Rajavacha Apyesha Vamshan Rajarshin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanah Anuvartita Svidyashasa Saduvadena Satamah. Synonyms, please repeat along if you would like, or just listen. Sri Raja, the all good king, Maharaj Yudhishthir, Uvacha, said, Api, weather, Eshaha, this, Vamshyan, family, Rajarshin, of saintly kings, Punya Shlokan, pious by the very name, Mahatmanaha, all great souls, Anuvartita, follower, Svit, will it be, Yashasa, by achievement, Saduvadena, by glorification, Sattamaha, O great souls. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The good king Yudhishthir inquired, O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in his achievements, as others who appeared in this great royal family? So please, responsibly. The good king Yudhishthir inquired, O great souls, will he become as saintly a king?
O great souls, will he become as saintly a king?
As pious in his very name and as famous and glorified in his achievements.
As pious in his very name and as famous and glorified in his achievements.
As others who appeared in this great royal family. So here, this is Maharaj Yudhishthir speaking to the learned brahmanas who are performing the birthrites of baby Parikshit. As we know, he will be the heir to the king, to the throne of Maharaj Yudhishthir, and he is his grandson. Purport. The forefathers of King Yudhishthir were all great saintly kings, pious and glorified by their great achievements. They were all saints on a royal throne, and therefore all the members of the state were happy, pious, well-behaved, prosperous, and spiritually enlightened. Under strict guidance of the great souls and spiritual injunctions, such great saintly kings were trained up, and as a result, the kingdom was full of saintly persons and was a happy land of spiritual life. Maharaj Yudhishthir was himself a replica of his ancestors, and he desired the next king after him become exactly like his great forefathers. He was happy to learn from the learned brahmanas that by astrological calculations, the child would be born a first great devotee of the Lord, and more confidentially he wanted to know whether the child was going to follow in the footsteps of his great forefathers. That is the way of the monarchical state. The reigning king should be a pious, chivalrous devotee of the Lord, and fear personified for the upstarts. He must also leave an heir apparent equally qualified to rule over the innocent citizens. In the modern setup of the democratic states, the people themselves are fallen to the qualities of the Shudras or less, and the government is run by their representative who is ignorant of the scriptural mode of administrative education. Thus, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with Shudra qualities, manifested by lust and avarice. Such administrators quarrel every day amongst themselves. The cabinet of ministers changes often due to party and group selfishness. Everyone wants to exploit the state resources till he dies. No one retires from political life unless forced to do so. How can such low-grade men do good to the people? The result is corruption, intrigue, and hypocrisy. They should learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam how ideal the administrators must be before they can give charge of different posts. Namagyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshu umilitamyena tasmai shri gurave namaha anchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namaha. So here the learned brahmanas are pleased by the charities which were given by Maharaj Yudhishthir upon the birth of Parikshit. And as a result, they are reading the baby's horoscope, natal chart. And Maharaj Yudhishthir is inquiring about the qualities of the child. You know, will he be a great soul? Will he be a great king or a jarshi? And we found out in a previous shloka that the brahmana said that yes, he will be a great soul. He will indeed be, he is a Mahabhagavat. And now in this shloka, Yudhishthira is inquiring, but will he also be a great king? Will he be a Rajarshi, like all the kings and like all the his lineage from Pur Maharaj? They were all great kings. Will Parikshit be also such a great king? The child was the only, this is from earlier in the chapter, the child was the only surviving male descendant of Puru, the pious forefathers of the virtuous King Yudhishthir. The Lord wants to continue the line of pious kings to rule over the earth as his representatives for the actual progress of peaceful and prosperous life. So a pious king means peaceful and prosperous life. And after, we know after the Battle of Kurukshetra, many of the lineage, much of the lineage was destroyed in the war. And even up to the next generation after Maharaj Yudhishthir. And so, therefore, Parikshit was the only one, he skipped a generation, it's his grandson, who was in the line to be the heir to the throne. And as we know, Ashwatthama wanted to kill him because he was the only surviving Pandava descendant, but the Lord who comes to protect and restore balance to the world. He comes to correct the situation. The Lord saved baby Parikshit in the womb to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants. I myself appear millennium after millennium. And so as we know, ideal world government is, can somebody say, what is ideal world government? What kind of a leader, according to the Bhagavatam? Monarchical, correct, yes, monarchical. And the king should be an ideal human and an ideal king who is a representative of God. So even in those times, I guess there were bad kings. There was a potential that there was a king, but he wouldn't be a Rajarshi. So it's not just in modern times that the leadership is degraded. As we know, for example, the example of Maharaj, of Hiranyakashipu and his son. Hiranyakashipu was a Griha Medinam king. He was attached to royal sense gratification. He was an Arajarshi, and he also wanted to train up Prahlad to become a Griha Medinam king. But Prahlad was already in a womb. He was a devotee, and he was meant to be a devotee, and therefore he was not interested in that program, and he was Arajarshi, even from birth. As we know, Griha Medinam kings, they can wreak a lot of havoc in the universe, versus a Rajarshi who restores balance and who keeps everybody happy and prosperous. And on the other hand, a bad king can really, you know, cause a lot of problems for the universe and destroy all good things, essentially. As we know, Hiranyakashipu, he stopped all Vedic sacrifices, he took over Indra's residence, he was cruel and oppressive, he burned residences, bridges, ashrams, and the Lord had to appear to correct the situation. In another instance later on, Mother Bhumi went to pray to Lord Vishnu because the earth was overburdened by demoniac kings, and she had to get relief from Lord Vishnu. So we can understand that a bad king can do a lot of damage to the universe. That's why it's very important that there is a saintly king or good king in leadership. One common denominator that I thought was evidenced in the Bhagavatam of a bad king is the idea that instead of worshiping the Lord, they want to be worshipped themselves as a king. And one example is King Vena. When the king ascended to the throne, he became all-powerful with eight kinds of opulences. Consequently, he became too proud. By virtue of his false prestige, he considered himself to be greater than anyone. Thus, he began to insult great personalities. Right? And same with Hiranyakashipu, he insulted all the demigods. King Vena became overly blind due to his opulences. He mounted a chariot and, just like an uncontrolled elephant, began to travel through the kingdom, causing the sky and earth to tremble wherever he went. And just like Hiranyakashipu, Vena stopped all the sacrifices and he wanted the people to worship him instead. Those who, out of gross ignorance, this is Vena speaking, do not worship the king, who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, experience happiness neither in this world nor in the world after death. And as we know, the Brahmanas got very angry when they heard this false philosophy being spoken, and they decided to kill him, rightfully so, using mantras. King Vena was already as good as dead due to his blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, without using any weapons, the sages kill King Vena simply by high-sounding words. And then out of the limbs of King Vena was manifested a good king, a just king, which was Prithi Maharaj. This king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheistic. So all the qualities of a Rajarshi. The king alone in his own body will be able in due course of time to maintain all living entities and keep them in a pleasant condition. Thus, he will maintain the upper planetary system by inducing the populace to perform Vedic sacrifices. In due course of time, he will also maintain this earthly planet by discharging proper rainfall. Hridayananda Maharaj spoke about the cosmic economy, so a good king has to maintain that cosmic economy, which is, can somebody say, what is the cosmic economy? Versus a modern economy, which is based on, you know, like money, and it's basically false. So what is a cosmic economy? Yes, basically offering sacrifices, rain, and then from the rain come grains, and from the grains comes food and wealth. So Maharaj, Hridayananda Maharaj said that this is the correct cosmic economy. And we can perceive how today's economy, which isn't based on that, right, is causing a lot of sinful reactions in the world, and it's not without a price. It's going on, but you know, those activities will have repercussions in the world, such as wars and famines. So what ultimately made Maharaj Yudhishthira a great king was the fact that he was a devotee of the Lord. In the eighth canto, it talks about how he was considered greater than even King Indra, even though Indra had, you know, more power and more opulence as a demigod. But the reason that Maharaj Yudhishthira was considered more powerful was because he was a pure devotee of the Lord, and by his grace only was he able to do all sorts of feats and maintain and protect all the living entities. So only by Krishna's grace is a Rajarshi able to rule. So being a good devotee is the prime quality of a Rajarshi. So Yudhishthira is asking, will my heir, where Maharaj Pariksit, be this type of king? Will he be a Rajarshi who will do all these things? And little spoiler, in the next shloka, we're told that, yes, he will be such a king. We'll leave that for tomorrow. In the last part of the purport, Prabhupada talks about sort of the modern-day situation. Prabhupada is saying, in the modern setup of the democratic states, the people themselves are fallen to the qualities of the Shudras or less, and the government is run by their representative, who is ignorant of the scriptural mode of administrative education. Thus, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with Shudra qualities, manifested by lust and avarice. So in one of the earlier chapters, it said that Maharaj Yudhishthira was not a typically unenlightened political leader of the modern democracy. He was not a typically unenlightened leader of the modern day. And how are the modern leaders unenlightened? In the purport, Prabhupada says, the leaders are ignorant of scriptural mode of administrative education. In the second chapter of this canto, Prabhupada says that the completely bewildered material civilization. So another way that these modern leaders are unenlightened is that they are wrongly directing the citizens towards the fulfillment of sense gratification. In such civilization, in all spheres of life, the ultimate end is sense gratification. In politics, social service, altruism, philanthropy, and ultimately in religion or even in salvation, the very same tint of sense gratification is ever increasingly predominant. So we can perceive this and we can understand this. There's no sacrifices going on by the modern leaders, at least not to the Lord. And there's no cosmic economy, and as a result, it's all about sense gratification, and we can understand that this is going to produce, is producing a lot of simple reactions and is leading the civilization essentially towards hell. Just trying to see what to cut out here, just to stay on time. Okay, so we can mention, where does this idea of the modern republic come from in the modern age? One of the earlier chapters, it talked about how an ideal king like Maharaj Yudhishthir, he is a trained king. And Shesha Prabhu had a class about how it's important to give proper training, kshatriya training to the king. So even though he's born with good qualities, he's born with devotional aptitude, he also needs to receive training. So a trained king like Maharaj Yudhishthir is by far the most superior form of government, superior to modern republics, or governments of the people by the people. So in Kali Yuga, you know, this idea has been completely eliminated, this idea of a saintly Rajarshi or a perfect person being a leader. So to alleviate the situation of sort of like bad evil leaders, the idea of a republic or a democracy was established, and this was earliest known in the 6th century by the Greeks and the Romans. Democracy to help to deal with the situation of absolute leaders who, you know, did all sorts of horrible things. So this democracy was created, demos in Greek meaning people and kratos to rule. Demos, people, kratos, rule. So essentially ruled by the people, power held by the people and their elected representatives. And this was in opposition to monarchy and family lineages, which they saw was full of corruption. So that it's a little catch-22, right? The ideal government is a monarchy, but since there is no perfect person, this monarchy becomes very abused and corrupted by absolute power. And so instead of having this knowledge that it requires a perfect person or a jarshi, like, let's create this other system, this democracy, right? Which Prabhupada says is also like a fallen situation, right? So the solution wasn't really a solution. The mass of people, especially in this age of Kali, are all born Shudras, basically low-born, ill-trained, unfortunate, and badly associated. They themselves do not know the highest perfectional aim of life. Therefore, votes cast by them actually have no value, and thus persons elected by such irresponsible votes cannot be responsible representatives like Maharaj Yudhishthir. And then in a purport, Prabhupada says, how can such low-grade men do good to the people? The result is corruption, intrigue, and hypocrisy. They should learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam how ideal the administrators must be before they can be given charge of different posts. I'll just make one last point and then we can hopefully have some discussion. So here Prabhupada talks about the result is corruption, intrigue, and hypocrisy. When I hear the word intrigue, what comes to mind is like those royal courts that we don't have today, but you know, several hundred years ago and before, there was a royal court, which was a set of noblemen and attendants that were living at the palace, basically with the king and attending to the king. And the only way to like get ahead in life was to basically like please that king, was to fawn over the king and please him, and then receive his good favor. So, because that was the program, as a result, there was all sorts of corruption and intrigue, and all sorts of very nasty things that happened. I have a definition here. It calls it a series of setups that leads to a payoff for people to get closer to the king and get his favor. And we can also understand how this is like, it's just such a degraded situation. And we can see, for example, I'll just mention really quick, really good Kali Yuga leaders, Henry VIII. Who, interestingly enough, reigned in England at the time of Lord Chaitanya, right? In the 16th century. At the time of Lord Chaitanya, King Henry was ruling England. So the court was set up that everybody had to like fawn over the king and basically be like sycophants, right? But this king himself was also like a horrible, horrible person, like a horrible, absolute monarch. And he was also known just as King Vena. He ushered the divine right of kings into the English constitution, that the king has like divine privileges and should be treated like a god. He also greatly expanded royal power during his reign. He frequently used charges of treason and heresy to quell dissent, and those accused were often executed without a formal trial, right? So if anybody is in his way, or anybody sort of disagrees with him, or doesn't, you know, fawn over him enough, isn't enough of a sycophant, all that would happen was he would be accused of treason and heresy, and there was no system that would, you know, defend him or prove him innocent. And if need be, he was executed. So this was the type of person that the court had to like fawn over and try to get favor of. And as we know, he was married 6 times, and 2 of his wives were executed publicly. They were beheaded for treason, you know, charges that he made up. We don't really know, you know, how true they were or not, but certainly they did not deserve to be, you know, beheaded publicly. And at the time, that was a very, like, huge deal because the queen had never been beheaded. So 2 of his wives suffered that fate. So this was supposedly like a great king. And just to finish up, this is from Prabhupada's book, A Second Chance. Upholding religious principles is the duty of the king or government. Unfortunately, in the present age, Kali Yuga people have lost their intelligence, so they cannot differentiate between dharma and adharma. The courts do not know whom to punish and whom not, right? The courts of Henry VIII were just completely corrupt. And if anybody needed to be accused of treason, the courts were all behind it. So in this age, the courts do not know whom to punish and whom not. Everything is very corrupt. And the only shelter that we have is to always chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and to take shelter of Krishna. And this doesn't mean that we don't try to influence leaders or intelligentsia of the society, like Kridananda Maharaj was saying. It is important to to strive in that way, to try to influence the intelligentsia and try to give them the teachings of the Bhagavatam and the holy name, so that hopefully this modern leadership idea can be transformed. Right? And from the, just one last quote from the fifth chapter of this canto, it's saying how the Bhagavatam is meant to cleanse the polluted atmosphere of the world. Broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. So this is what we're doing today. So hopefully this is a little bit contributing to, as it says in this quote, cleansing the polluted atmosphere of the world. I'll stop there, see if anybody would like to add something. Any discussion points?
Thank you for a really nice class. Okay. I was going to say that I heard in a tape before where Prabhupada calls democracy actually demon crazy.
Yes.
That, you know, people are so easily manipulated, and we can see that, you know, all the time in politics.
Absolutely.
So that they won't be able to come to a good decision. So that's one thing. And
absolutely. The things that they're being presented aren't even like reality.
Right.
So what are you voting on exactly? Like, they don't even know what they're voting on.
Yeah, it's pretty sad because, you know, everybody wants to play a part and have a choice, but the way things are manipulated. I think Plato actually also talks about democracy eventually ending up in failure because people are just manipulated.
Interesting, thank
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the divine right of kings, that Prabhupada does mention any great leader he's empowered by Krishna. Now, so it's hard to understand how that works with demonic leaders, but
I think it's different, as you say, being empowered by Krishna versus like the divine right of kings, meaning that the king is God himself.
Right. Sure, that's definitely different.
It's very, very different. Because, you know, one, like we saw in the case of Hiranyakashipu or King Vena, instead of offering sacrifices to the Lord, inducing the populace to offer sacrifices to God, they stopped all that and they wanted themselves to be worshipped. So we can see how even just that is going to cause so many problems because they don't have the mercy of the Lord. And on top of that, they were also doing other, you know, just demoniac things like burning ashrams and villages. And
I mean, it's interesting because they had to perform some kind of great sacrifice in order to gain power like that, but then it's misused. And so, like you mentioned, both with Vena and Hiranyakashipu, they offend great personalities, and then I remember reading about it, that's the beginning of the end. As soon as Hiranyakashipu started to offend Kalar, then he really started
yes.
to lose everything.
Right, so, right.
That's why we have to be so careful.
Yes. And the way that he gained his power was that he was performing all those like austerities, but they weren't like Vishnu austerities. You know, he was just trying to get benedictions from like a powerful personality like Brahma.
And that shows the difference between like the demigods and Vishnu and Krishna, that they're obligated to give benedictions. Even with Lord Shiva, it was so detrimental to him because as soon as Rukasura got the benediction, he wanted to try it out on Lord Shiva. But Krishna, especially with his devotees, he will give it if he thinks it's not going to help them.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
It's
yeah.
So nice.
Yeah. There's Shesha for them.
It's interesting you mentioned Henry VIII. There's an interesting parallel in the purport Prabhupada says that the king has so many different duties. Two or three he mentions. But he also puts having an heir apparent, making sure there's an heir apparent, as one of the primary duties of the king. And it's kind of, you know, as I said, a perverted parallel, but Henry VIII actually, he was trying to do that too.
Oh, yes.
That's why he executed
That's a nice point.
His wives, you know, because if the,
it was part of the reason, yeah.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. the wife was executed, and if people could see that, then there would be no guy coming later and saying, well, I have a claim to the throne through this person.
Yes, that was another whole area of intrigue and corruption. That whole like getting power of the throne and claiming rights to the throne. Yeah,
it's something that's also mentioned in Ramayana. Dasaratha was concerned about having a son, and that was a big concern. And so also in the sixth canto. Chichiketu. This is an important part of that lila. So it's actually a very important duty of the king to make sure that there's a bona fide heir to the throne so that all the good qualities continue.
Thank you. That's a nice point, yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for such a nice class.
Thank you.
And yeah, I just wanted to tack on, yeah, that the divine right of kings in itself is not bad, but it's just that it was being invoked by someone who wasn't really a king.
Thank you. Yes, well, divine right of kings, as it was used, for example, in Henry VIII, like he put that in a constitution, is like a slight word jugglery. Can't even pronounce that. Word jugglery. Meant like he wants to be worshipped as God, right? Which was the same with King Vena and King and Maharaj Hiranyakashipu, right? They wanted to be worshipped instead of worshipping God. And he actually created a whole new religion, Henry VIII, that puts king at the center of that religion, right? That's how the whole... he wanted to do away with Catholicism because he didn't want to... he didn't want to have a power. He didn't want Rome to be more powerful than him. So he created this whole new religion where he was like the center of the religion. So it's really interesting. It's kind of, he did the same thing like Vena and Hiranyakashipu, right?
How did he die? I don't know the history. How did Henry
die? Well, he got some pretty bad sinful reactions. Well, he was like very... kind of very lively and like athletic king in his youth, and like very lively and athletic, and he had like a lot of charisma. But I guess when he did all those like sinful things, he got ill, and he gained a lot of weight, and he basically like slowly, not that slowly, over like some years, he basically died from that. He wasn't too old. But, you know, we can understand that his sinful reactions, like, took over. And it was a very big point of pain for him. He gained all this weight, and he couldn't move. And it was very painful for him. And it's interesting how these reactions come, like, just to, like, particularly punish a certain person. Like, he loved being active, and he loved being, you know, like, youthful, and he was, like, in great shape. And then he got this illness where he like couldn't move, and he gained a lot of weight, and his mind became unclear. And I don't know exactly the name of the illness that he had, probably a few things, and he died. He died from that.
And his sons became king. They were good people.
Oh no, actually, like his heir ended up being Elizabeth. He had like a bunch of children, like girls and boys, and I think there was a male heir. But something happened to him, Either he was like killed, like Shisha was saying, there's all this intrigue around like the killing the heir and like getting someone else in power. Either he was killed or he died somehow, and eventually, like Elizabeth, there was a woman, a daughter, who had to take over. So Elizabeth was actually his heir from the second wife who was beheaded, Anne Boleyn. So yeah, even with all those wives and all those children, he could not get a male heir, actually. So I think this is also like a sinful, this is also punishment, right? This is also like a sinful reaction. You did all that to try to get a male heir, but, and you did all sorts of sins to do that, but look, like in the end you didn't get that either, right? It was just interesting because we talked about how like they were all, the court had to like fawn over the king and they were all like sycophants. So when he gained a lot of weight, what members of the court would do was wear like fat suits so that you know, he wouldn't feel like he was the only like pretend one. So they all wore like fat, like to please him, I guess, to fawn over him. Anything else? Thank you for listening.